Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top comics sold through Diamond to retailers for January 2020. We're talking about numbers that go into the stores, not what goes out to the readers, just like always. So joining me tonight is Sam. How you doing tonight, Sam?
I am well, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. We've also got Eric from Cowabunga. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing good.
Cool. Now, this is the January data. I will fess up, we're recording this on March 17th because I took pretty much all of February off, and it took me a little bit to get the numbers crunched and all of us together. In this day and age of COVID-19, we are practicing social distancing. We are literally states away from each other. I don't think we can get any safer than that, but, you know, hey, if we can, we will.
That's right. We're here for everybody else.
Yeah. if we look at the breakdown in January, now, we always talk about how Q1 is usually not the strongest of quarters. This is very much the case. We had a total of just under 5.8 million units for the top 300. About 51.84% of that was Marvel, 32.85% of that was DC, and only about 4.76% of that was Image. And then we've got the other premier publishers, Boom, IDW, Dynamite, and Dark Horse. Boom doing a little under 3%, and then IDW and Dynamite right around 2.25%, and then Dark Horse down at about 1.3%. We add those five premier publishers, not including Marvel and DC, that's 13.57% of the sales. We add back in Marvel and DC, and we're talking 98.26% of the sales. We've got a few items from Ablaze, Valiant, Archie, Oni, Ahoy, Titan, and Abstract in the top 300, but statistically speaking, not that big of a deal compared to, you know, like the 3 million units for Marvel and the 1.9 million for DC. Again, not terribly unusual into how it's split out and stuff. We're down about 188,616 units from last month, which isn't that bad, but again, it's a matter of first quarter. We expect it not to be great, just because it usually happens that way. But we do got to remember that there was kind of three and a half weeks in December with the odd shipping there at the end of the year. So it's not like it's compared to a 5 week really robust December either. There's really not a whole lot, I think, that jumps out to me as far as the breakdown goes. Other than Image with that 4.76% of the total units, we've seen it stronger in the past.
For sure. And we see a continuing trend that I think we kind of talked about last month in December with the Boom Studios books really starting to climb and continuing to kind of hold, I think, a relevant spot here in the top five at least each month, going above Dark Horse, which we kind of expected with their loss of licensed titles. And then Dynamite and now IDW. So it's been a continued rise for Boom Studios, and I think we're going to look to see probably more of that continued success for them.
I think so. I think Boom's got a good catalog of stuff right now. I think also the fact that they've overtaken IDW's is much a reflection on IDW as Boom, because I think in some points in the past, I mean, IDW's got a good lineup, but I think at other times they've had a bit more strength in a few areas with the Hasbro line and some stuff like that that we're just not seeing right now to the same extent we had in the past.
Sure.
Anything else on the breakdown, or should we jump over to the top comics?
It does. I'm looking through it. It doesn't seem that bad, if that makes any sense. I'm trying to figure this.
I don't think it is that bad. I think what we're seeing is the seasonality coming into play. It's down a little, but we kind of expect that for January. It's not like it's suddenly dropped off a cliff or something like that. Where I do think it starts to get noticeable is we only had five items over 80,000 units. So that's where I think it's a little bit, I don't say more concerning, but a little more visible and stuff. Because we've had some months in the past where we'll have, you know, a dozen things over the 100,000 mark or whatever. One or two months where we had just about nothing over like 75,000. So I think looking at this breakdown and where the total is for the top 300 is one metric, but then also looking at how the titles are doing and what's at the top of the list is another metric that has some value.
Absolutely. But looking purely at the totals, December and January combined this year and last year are almost identical with, again, some of that weirdness in the shipping. They're actually flip flop, it looks like. Last year, January was at 26.6 million and December was at 25.3. This time, December was at 26.7 and January was at 25.0. They're very, very similar for the 2 months year over year. Lack of growth, obviously, is a different concern, but it's certainly not dying quickly.
No, it's not. It's just the likelihood of us like having record high sales into January, I think, is not great. So, and again, this is just showing us that, like you said, you know, year over year, we're seeing the same sort of patterns that we've seen at this time of year in the past.
Yeah, and if the patterns continue, February should be worse.
And since we're recording this after I've seen the February numbers, I can say, yes, it was.
And unfortunately, I think March may be could potentially be a high watermark here for a little bit as we continue to progress through this COVID-19 circus that we're part of is about the best thing I can put. So we'll look to see how the numbers adjust over time with that.
Let's talk about that for a few minutes because, I mean, if I were looking just at the numbers and excluding, you know, like reality of the health situation around the world and stuff with COVID-19, I'd be thinking January and looking a little towards February and stuff. Okay, it's down. It's Q1. I expect that. We've got Empire that's going to be kicking in a little bit over at Marvel. We've got the Generation stuff over at DC. You know, we've got other things that are kind of come into full swing or whatever. Seasonal dip, it'll go up. But we are in, I think, a very odd time in terms of the pandemic going around with COVID-19, the combination of some very legitimate health concerns and just some panic and I don't say overreaction and stuff. I think different people are reacting very differently to the situation. And we're seeing a lot of companies going virtual where they can, a lot just kind of closing down for a little bit, schools shutting down for a little bit in some cases. And again, community by community, it's a little bit different. And man, I am really curious what kind of impact that's going to have on comics. Because while I'm hearing reports of, you know, movies shutting down production, television shutting down production, comics does not require large groups of people working in close physical proximity to produce comics for the most part.
Correct.
Now, there is some need for that, but there's no reason to think that they're going to have to shut down the production of, you know, Batman or the X-Men stuff during COVID-19. Now, there may be some bumps in the road. There may be some issues, but it's not like it's just got to stop because of the number of people involved.
Yes, but the entertainment income of the people who purchase them will be severely affected.
Yes.
I mean, hotels expected today, they said, to lay off 1 million people in the next 2 weeks. Bars and restaurants, the estimates are 30 to 55 million will be laid off in the next few weeks. That's going to have an impact on disposable income out there.
Absolutely. I think the number of industries that are just devastated by this, that's going to ripple throughout the economy and throughout the communities. I mean, kind of how can it not? I wonder what's going to be the driving force, people's need for escapist entertainment, their inability to either go get it or have money to you know, afford it, or what? I mean, we could be at a point where with a halfway decent ad campaign, we could see the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited stuff really gain a lot of subscribers, or the DC Universe stuff, or something like that, potentially. Not saying it's gonna happen, it could. It's inexpensive, it's, you know, effectively, if you've got your tablet and a charger and power at home, it's you don't need to go out and go contact anybody to go get it. So there's opportunities there. But then again, like you said, it comes down to, is that what people are focusing their attention on? Or are they worried about, you know, how are they going to make ends meet? It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, certainly we've seen and heard quite a bit of retailer concern. Certain areas of the country shut down before others. Certain cities, municipalities, states are all differing in how they are approaching kind of trying to push down this curve and elongate the COVID-19 process, but, you know, get it into a manageable state where hospitals aren't overrun. One of the things that we're seeing is there's a lot of comic stores that are just basically throwing their hands up and they're just saying, I'm done. That's it. End of game. For us, we, based on everything our governor has provided, our restaurants and bars are officially closed for in-house entertainment. If they have a kitchen and they're doing takeouts, drive-through, those things are still open. But we've, you know, continued to monitor and watch everything, and we are still able to maintain our presence and be open. We have to cancel our gaming events, which are groups of 10 or more. So that's a little bit of a hit. But what we have noticed in probably the last 4 days is a steady flow of people coming in. Our regulars are coming in, as well as additional people we've never seen. And that's a good thing. The nice difference between now and other times is usually when you have a higher percentage, I guess, increase of looky-loos, there's usually not as much purchasing going on. They tend to just look at the product and then decide to go and revert to buy it on Amazon. What we're actually seeing now is people walking in the store, picking up the product, and walking it over to the counter and purchasing it. Everything from board games to trades, you know, kind of all over the place. But we're actually starting to see and hear from people that they appreciate that we're open, because we are one of those forms of escapist entertainment. We are very fortunate as well that the communities within our probably 10 to 15 minute driving area are a heavier percentage, I think, than the national average, tend to be those business type jobs where people can work from home, or their manufacturing facilities that aren't shutting down right now. So income has been fairly steady, and we're lucking out. But, you know, that can all change tomorrow. We've been hearing from different sources a number of different things, none of which I'm going to say, because until they're real, it doesn't really matter. But some of the things we're hearing could significantly impact not just our business, but all businesses around the nation and how they operate. So we're just kind of waiting. It will be very interesting to see how it all plays out. There's a couple of store owners that we've heard from that have already said they're just pulling the plug. They're done. They're going to close up now, and they've already canceled or suspended their Diamond account. And in all likelihood, because of this, they'll probably be done selling comics in general, which is a shame. Hopefully it's not a decision that they're just making as a knee-jerk type of decision, but we shall see. So, you know, if and when people are looking for online options, there's multiple ones out there. And, you know, we will continue to sell our books and ship them out. You know, it only takes two of us to do that part. So we are under that 10-person threshold, and we can do it 6 feet apart if needed.
Cool. Well, stay safe, because you're doing a good service as far as I'm concerned, at least. I like getting my comics that way.
Here's the thing, you know this, Eric. For cash flow, you can say it's a rash. Ultimately, there's a lot of small businesses that simply cannot afford to be closed for multiple weeks. They just can't.
Right, and for multiple reasons, right? It can be they already have a product flow of items coming in, that invoices are ready to be paid. They have payroll to worry about, rent. You know, it's tough, and every business is different. We're in a decent situation. We sat down as management and had a real good look at things, and we said we're in for the duration. We're not stopping payroll. We are shifting a lot of our effort to different sales channels. And to your point, Sam, there's a lot of mom and pop shops that just don't have that ability, right? I mean, if you're, you know, selling candy or, you know, stuff like that, you're not able to get online and compete. So it's tough. Thankfully, in the collectibles world, if you have the rare and valuable collectibles, they're still rare and valuable. We'll see how long this goes. And that can be impacted too, right? As people's income disappear, their ability to purchase, you know, higher end items may disappear as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If it's something that, you know, we weather this for the 2 weeks some municipalities are suggesting, and, you know, for their initial shutdowns and stuff. And that's the worst of it. It's not a big deal. But if this goes on for a couple of months, yeah, the ability to weather a storm, it's funny because I think, to a degree, smaller companies like yourself, Eric, are in a better position in terms of you don't need, you know, a bunch of people to keep the business going. So you can kind of deal a little safer in some stuff. But the bigger companies are the ones that have, hopefully, the bigger cash reserves to weather the storm. They've also got a bigger payroll to get out every time.
Yep.
This is the exact sort of thing I've worried about for many years in terms of the comic industry. There's a number of titles that always seem to be just on the edge of, well, they're doing okay for now, but it wouldn't take much to have them collapse or something. There's titles like that. There's retailers like that. There's publishers like that. And it's a small enough industry that any major shakeup in any one section of it can reverberate across the thing. We've seen that in the past with the distributor wars in the 90s. And in this case, it may not be any company doing anything bad, unfortunate, or whatever. It just may be the general economy that isn't looking to go buy comics right now.
Right.
Or flip side, people are at home and they're bored and they got nothing better to do. So it's, you know what? I'm finally going to go to the hit that comic shop. I've heard about this. I'm going to go in. I'm going to get it. I'm going to pay. I'm going to go home. I'm going to read it. And that almost sounds like what's happening at your store.
That's early, though.
Yeah, that is.
As income dissipates, won't continue the case.
True. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see how long this goes and how it plays out. You know, again, I look at a seasonal dip at the beginning of the year, and normally I think it's not that big of a deal. But then we look at an unknown future in terms of the health of the reading populace, the willingness to go out, and the financial reserves to go buy the stuff. It could be a very bumpy year for comics and the rest of the economy in general, not just comics. I mean, when we're seeing TV productions shut down, movie productions shut down, I mean, late night talk shows have, it seems like, kind of stopped. Sports games have stopped. People are going to have to adjust how they spend their entertainment time, and, you know, how they finance that as well, potentially.
And not to make light of the situation, but I will say I've noticed a very somewhat pleasant trend in the last couple of days. The amount of people, families, kids, adults that I see out walking around on the sidewalk, walking their dog, riding bikes, is probably about 10 times more than I normally see. And it does make me a little happy to see that maybe people are able to reconnect a little bit and break away from the screen. So if there's anything we can all gain out of this, maybe it's a little bit more of an appreciation for the world surrounding us.
Yeah, I think it can definitely help put some stuff into perspective as to what's important and what's not. And again, do you want to spend your time staring at a computer screen or actually, you know, talking with somebody? So let's go take a look at the top comics and see what there is to see. The top-selling comic this time around in January was Wonder Woman 750 with 167,377 units. That was up about, I don't know, 500%, I think, from the previous issue, which sold, 27,775? So a pretty dramatic increase there when they shifted both the numbering to revert to, I guess, legacy numbering, additional page count, a lot of different creators and such. We, of course, do not expect this to last for any duration of time, and I'm scrolling down to see if... I don't think 751 was in this month. I think it's in the February numbers. How did that do at your shop?
Not too bad. Nowhere close to what Action and Detective, you know, those big books did. I think that the one that came out today, Robin, Wonder Woman, did significantly better than what Robin will do for us. But one interesting thing that I've noticed is with the Action and Detective ones, when those books came out, they were out of stock within probably 72 hours at Diamond. So damages, shortages, and then a few reorders. Every single one of the covers for Wonder Woman is still available at the Diamond Warehouse. So that does tell me that there was a, you know, an overprint, as there is, should normally be, but the ongoing demand is not there compared to what the other ones were.
Now that's interesting because arguably, that was the comic that may have kicked off the whole 5G initiative over at DC for whatever that was going to be and whatever it's going to be now that Dan Didio is no longer kind of leading that because he's no longer at DC. I was curious if there was going to be any kind of speculator interest in that comic for that reason.
There didn't seem to really be. It was really more of just a cover preference. Some people got multiple covers, and it was a higher price point. But the other thing is there was absolutely no publisher hype around it. So even if it did have something to do with 5G, there was nothing pushing it.
Yeah.
And none of the speculator apps or speculator websites really pushed it either. So there was no big heat.
Well, and I think really until we hit the Free Comic Book Day Generation Zero and then the Generation One in May or whatever, we're not going to know if it really plays into that or not. It looks like it does for one of the storylines, but whether that's enough for people to equate it to, you know, the dawn of the Silver Age or something like that, it's premature.
Right.
So, interesting. The number two item was Thor number one with 158,872 units. Not crazy surprising that it did well. This is another one, though, that I really don't expect the second issue to do as well, just because, you know, Marvel tends to have noticeable second issue drops. As a matter of fact, it's down at rank number 15 at 51,244 units. So that's a drop of, 107,628 units, or 67.75% from that number one down to that number two.
Expect these numbers to start going up.
Okay.
This is a book in a series that is starting to catch heat pretty quick. We've got people coming in frequently asking for issues one and two, and we are sold out, so we're waiting on reprints to come out, which I believe some of them came out today. But this is a book that is just jumping up right now as far as, it's not really going as a hot book for speculators, but it's definitely a book that is starting to sell really well. We've seen increased orders on numbers 3 and 4 and 5 as well. And then on issue 4, Marvel did an overprint. So we had extra copies. I think we got 50% extra, and we sold them all off the shelf. I mean, and we had a substantial stack. So this is, for some reason, this is kind of getting the Immortal Hulk type thing where it's catching heat. So I expect to see these numbers going up at least for the next couple of issues.
Cool. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. And really, these days, the number one from Marvel is so non-indicative of sales because they tend to promote it with different covers and stuff like that. But really, when you start to see the gain, particularly both during that honeymoon period of the first couple where, you know, anyone who's doing pre-orders, either as a reader or as a retailer, is kind of doing it sight unseen. And then immediately thereafter, when you get towards that fourth, fifth issue and you start to see that uptick there, that's a great sign. It doesn't happen often enough.
Right.
This was also one of the ones that was in kind of that odd solicitation bubble where it was, I think, in the previews but not in the order form or something like that. And it was kind of sort of a previews plus item with Thor number one and Star Wars number one. Because of a slightly missed deadline or something.
Yeah, scheduling, man. It's a pain.
Yeah. Well, they got hit with that on a couple of things. Star Wars number one, is it ranked number three? That was another one that was that kind of odd kind of solicitation cycle. And it did 97,053 units. So didn't quite hit the 100,000 mark, but it came close. Whether it'll stay up there or not, well, again, we've got the second issue down at rank 28 at 44,619. So, yeah, it lost 54.03% of the sales on a second issue drop. Which, again, the second issue sales of both Star Wars and Thor are not bad. They just look kind of, you know, depressing compared to those first issue sales. But again, I go back to, you almost have to ignore first issue sales over at Marvel in terms of, you know, how is the title doing?
Right.
The exception to that being if it's a first issue that really did poorly in sales, at which point it's certainly not going to, like, skyrocket on the next issue. But, you know, hey. We then have X-Men's number 4 and 5. Number 4 doing 93,342 units. And then 5 at 80,443 units. That's a 12.91% drop for the fourth issue and another 13.82% for that fifth issue. I think these things are still kind of finding their level, but also top ongoing title right now. So even with it still dropping a little bit and finding its level, it's not doing badly at all. That having been said, double check that, because they're still doing the cardstock cover over on the Batman title, so it still beats out Batman, but just by a hair, because the total sales for Batman 86 is 80,053 versus the 80,443 for X-Men number 5. So it's close, but X-Men is still outselling Batman. I'd have to look at the February data to see if it continued that, and we'll talk about if it did in February when we talk about the February data.
No sense in getting ahead to come back behind.
Exactly, exactly. But this is where I still get kind of annoyed by, you know, these split price point items and stuff. I've got half a mind to just abstract that out and just kind of condense this down to here's how Batman did, regardless of if it had stuff at the different price points. Just, you know, have it as one entry on the list versus the two. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that or not. If you guys have thoughts on that, by all means, let me know.
You can put me down in the camp of just combine them.
I would say that as well for the types of discussions we have.
Yeah. Yep. It certainly may simplify some stuff. I'll have to look into that. Other stuff we have up in this area, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, new volume of that, 66,881 units that replaced the previous Guardians of the Galaxy, which had just ended when this one started. And then we've got Amazing Spider-Man averaging right around 57,600-ish, give or take 100, for the two issues there of 38 and 37. Star number 1 launched reasonably strong at 56,755 units. We'll see how that miniseries does. And then we've also got Iron Man 2020 number 1, which is the start not only of the new Iron Man title, but of the 2020 kind of mini event or whatever. It did 54,624 units. Personally, I think they're taking a storyline that they should have just done in the main Iron Man title and kicked out a few too many side stories on that, but that's what they decided to do.
I can't disagree with you.
So what else in this area looks interesting to you guys?
Well, that's the top 10. It's interesting how many of the X-books you have kind of in the top 25, kind of between 25 and 11 here. We've got a whole bunch of them in Excalibur, X-Force, New Mutants, Marvel's X, X-Force, etc.
Marvel's X is actually not part of the Dawn of X stuff.
Fair enough. Yeah, but you got two issues of X-Force, two issues of Excalibur, an issue of New Mutants.
Two, actually.
Well, okay, in the top 25, you've got one, it looks like. Or maybe I'm just not seeing it.
Rank 21's the other one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and then, you know, going down a little farther, you've got, you know, Fallen Angels and...
And Marauders.
Marauders, and, I mean, you've got a bunch of these books in the top 35 to 40 easily. And many in the top 20 to 25.
Before we started recording this evening, I did a quick chart of the Dawn of X titles. And unsurprisingly, X-Men is kind of a flagship title and stuff. It really surprised me how much those other ones are generally kind of clustering. They're all doing, I mean, generally about as well as each other. I mean, there's a little bit of difference and stuff. But like Fallen Angels, where it's averaging right in around 39,800-ish, and ended with the sixth issue, is not doing like much worse than Marauders, which is around that 44,600-ish. A few thousand less, but not like, oh my god, it's tanking, dump it. So I think as a franchise, you've got the clear flagship and then everything else doing a fairly consistent level. Eric, at your store, are you seeing a lot of people kind of in for a penny, in for a pound on the X-Books?
No. No one seems to be line-wide. It really seems to come down to character preferences. There are certain people who lean heavier towards New Mutants, a couple of people that are really into Marauders, and we tend to see, I would say on average, maybe three titles aside from, yeah, about three titles total in that Dawn of X kind of world and the X world. That is that's kind of the average people are going with, but there are a couple people that are in for all. However, I think as time goes on, they're starting to weed out which writers they maybe do or do not like, or which character groups they do or do not like. So what maybe the first two issues, everybody was kind of all in to see what shook out. And now I think we're kind of leveling off and people are picking their favorites.
That makes sense. I was just surprised again how tightly they're clustering, because there have been other times where we'll see a little bit more of, okay, there's the top dog, there's a couple in the middle, and there's one. It's like, yep, that one's gonna go away because it was clearly superfluous, and that it doesn't seem to be as pronounced here with the X books.
Right.
So we'll see how that continues as they add a few more and kind of rotate some titles in and out. So we've also got Avengers kind of in this basic area. It's averaging around 38,400-ish, give or take, for issues 30 and 29 there. That seems like one that, frankly, we've seen this franchise do much better in the past. I don't know if they're just focusing so much on the X-books that everything else is not getting the attention it needs or something, or if it's just this take on the Avengers isn't clicking with as many people. It wouldn't surprise me if they get to a point where they say, you know what, let's retool this, shuffle the Avengers around in their titles, and see if they can relaunch stronger with that franchise too.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be resonating in the store as much as maybe, say, an Amazing Spider-Man has. I think, for whatever reason, there was a lot of concern when Slott stepped away from Amazing Spider-Man. Not because the tail issues had gotten to be pretty big sellers with the Red Goblin, but just in general, a lot of people had kind of a confidence around what Dan Slott was doing. And so there was just a lot of trepidation and question. And what we've seen is the Spider-Man title continues to sell well. And some months it adds a couple hundred or a couple thousand, and some months it doesn't. And all that without having big ratio variants. So that's good. The Avengers, what once was kind of a fairly, I would say, a little bit stronger position than it is now, as the movies have wrapped up, as the Marvel line has gotten wider, I think what we have seen is maybe a little bit of the, that's not the most interesting thing, and people putting it back. So I think that's part of it. And I also think there's just some other competition in the marketplace for new unique titles that may be taking some people away from some of those, I guess, a little bit longer in the tooth type of team-ups and single-issue title characters that maybe people need a change from.
How much of the Avengers stuff do you think is a matter of them taking a superhero property and doing things like the Vampire War, the Ghost Rider stuff, and things of almost a supernatural vein there for quite a bit, and some somewhat different takes on these characters than we traditionally see?
I think it tends to be the different takes. That seems to really be the part that throws people, especially when they have not only kind of a history in the back of their mind of the characters if they've been a longer time reader, but especially if they've been watching the film franchise. Anytime things change compared to what people perceive to be the norm, they're just not interested. And it's not to say that change is bad. We've talked about this before. It's just when you have set a precedent through other channels of media and history and years, change can be abrupt, especially in a team title when you change multiple characters. That can be rough. I think there's been some amazing stories in the past decades where a character goes out of his or her normal, actions or verbal cues, things like that, or changes costume. We see that, but when you do multiples on a team, it can kind of disenfranchise a reader who has grown accustomed to seeing things a certain way. So it's almost too much change is too much change. But yeah, I don't think it has anything really necessarily to do with kind of some of those crossover events. Those tend to draw a few extra people in. I think it's just really when your core characters act differently in mass.
I wasn't even talking the crossover stuff, but just some of the title, the things that have been happening in the main Avenger book.
Oh, sure, sure. No, I don't know if that's necessarily the part that's really detracting people either. It could be for some. I shouldn't, broadcast and say all, but I think there's a tolerance right now for a few more of those out there stories just because of some of the other titles that are running. You know, we've got the Cosmic Ghost Rider. We had Baby Thanos. We've had, all sorts of different things happening. So I think there's a little bit more leeway for that. I think it's just really the characterizations may be a little bit off.
No, I would agree with that. Now, you'd mentioned Dan Slott on Spider-Man and stuff. He's over on Fantastic Four, and right now that's selling around 32,134 units for issue number 18. I think he's doing a great job there, but, I mean, while these sales are perfectly viable and stuff, they're not, setting the world on fire or anything. Given the track record he had established on Amazing Spider-Man, should we have expected some of that to transition to Fantastic Four when he got on that book?
I don't think so.
I agree with Jurg.
I think there's a couple of things that work against the Fantastic Four as a title. I think first and foremost, the amount of time that there wasn't as much in print because of the licensing and the video rights. I think that really put a huge damper because it took it out of people's main vision. I also think that some of the core constructs of the characters of the Fantastic Four, the way they interact, the way they talk, can be quite dated. And I think that while there is a nostalgic bit to it, I think those that want to be nostalgic will just go back and read the old stuff. So it's a really hard title to pull off in a modern day. And I think getting people excited for something that Marvel kind of almost actively tried to shun and quiet for a long time is very difficult. So those are my thoughts, but I'm interested to hear if Sam's got other thoughts.
I mostly agree. I think, I don't know what it is. I think it's hard. We've seen people try to do the Fantastic Four totally going against its history. That doesn't work. That being said, people totally invested in the Fantastic Four history are a smaller and older group. So you're not going to have top sales. You know, it's a kind of, you know, you can't win. If you try to go totally different, the old timers quit reading it and not many of the new people come in. And if you go, well, we're just doing this the old fashioned Fantastic Four way, you've got the old readers, but no new people come in. It's a catch 22.
Well, I think,
I mean, when was the last time the Fantastic Four really was a top? And I'm not talking an issue because they killed somebody or.
Right. When was it sustaining at the top? I'd have to go dig that up. I don't remember.
It's ages. I'd say several decades. I know Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four started to get some buzz as being really good, but that was once it was well towards the end of it. And so that might have helped the trades, but I don't know that it ever helped the individual issues.
Yeah, I'm trying to do a quick chart to see if I can see any point where I would say it was just sustaining at a great rate. I would say for a little bit in late 2006, but I think that would be the Hickman run. Although I could be wrong on that. No.
What was it before that? Hickman's got to be the teens.
Well, whatever it was doing in 2006, it was doing in the 80 to 90,000 range for a little bit.
How long's a little bit?
We'll say 5-6 months.
Is that when they killed Johnny?
I don't think so, because that's when they had a gap in the title for a bit. But I don't remember what was going on in every title that far back, to be honest. Give me a sec to see if I can adjust this chart such that it will...
2006 is during Civil War.
Yeah, it would be the Civil War stuff, because I think it was 2011-ish when they killed off Johnny and then did the Future Foundation stuff.
And then that's Hickman.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, 2006, I mean, that's Civil War when Stu was such... That's Civil War. It would did really well during Civil War when it was a main time.
Well, and everything was doing well with Civil War.
It also true.
So, yeah, I think it's never really been one of those top tier sustained franchises. And I think going back to one of your other comments, Eric, about what people expect right now, I think when the average American thinks of the Marvel Universe, they're influenced by the movie stuff, and the Fantastic Four isn't a part of that.
Right.
They're going to think Thor, Hulk, Iron Man and stuff. Yeah.
They've done movies.
Well, they've done four movies, the two with Michael Chiklis and Jessica Alba and stuff, and I thought those were all right. And then the other one was almost more of an ultimate Fantastic Four than anything else. And it had its pros and cons, but none of them are held in the same esteem as the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
No. And that said, while it certainly had its cons, the most recent Fantastic Four movie, John and Kathleen did a wonderful episode about it that convinced me to at least give it a shot. I've certainly seen worse films.
Mm-hmm. I would say the worst Fantastic Four one was the Roger Corman one.
See, I actually don't... I appreciate that for what it is. I think I
do too, but from an objective point of view, it was pretty bad. Now, granted, you spend a week and a half filming it and you do it for, you know, pennies on the dollar or whatever, you don't expect a Hollywood blockbuster movie either.
Yeah, I actually think the second of the Michael Chiklis, Captain America, Jessica Alba is worse than the Corman one myself. But that's just me.
I can see that. I think it's I'd have to rewatch them all to really rank them one above the other, and do it in rapid succession.
Yes.
All of them have their pros, all of them have their cons, but it does make certain characters feel, I think to a lot of people, less core to the Marvel Universe than they might otherwise. And again, just the duration without a title and stuff here and there, just because of the corporate games and stuff like that, I don't think helped the franchise any.
Right.
It's just a shame, because I think Slott's doing some great stuff there, and it's just not getting read that much. But truth be told, that can be said for a lot of this list, because, you know, again, most of this stuff is, you know, well, really, by the time we're at, you know, before we even get to rank 50, we're below 30,000 units.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of that area of the list, I want to talk about rank 51 for just a second. This is Symbiote Spider-Man Alien Reality number 2, 29,813 units. That's a drop of 64.55% from that first issue. Again, going back to first issues are not the least bit indicative of how a Marvel title sells these days.
No, and that one, I believe, had did I have an Artgerm variant on it? I'm going to do a quick search here.
The variants I have for it are a Bagley, a Wrong Limb, and a Suvik variant that was a 1 in 25. For the issue 2, I'm not sure about the first issue off the top of my head.
So there was... All right, A cover. Chichetto Young Guns, Dauterman Young Guns, Del Mundo Young Guns, Garon Young Guns, Cooter Young Guns, The Roz Young Guns. Art Adams, 8-part cover, a blank black variant, a 1 in 25 Saviuk. So yeah, there was a whole bunch of extra covers on this one. We definitely had a lot of people double-dipping, getting multiples, so not surprising. And number 2, like you said, far significantly less covers. There was a Limb, a Bagley, an A cover, and the 1 in 25.
Yeah, and that's again, part of why, you know, I look at a first issue at Marvel and, oh, it sold great. It's like, yeah, there's no reason to think the second one's going to do anywhere near as well just because of the games they're playing with the variant covers. Now, I say that, but I don't blame the publishers for doing this, because if you don't saturate the market on that first one and get more people to get their hands on it and at least try it, you're not going to sell well on the second one. It's very rare for a second issue to outsell the first issue. So doing whatever you can to bump up the numbers on the first, I mean, I get it. It makes sense.
Yep.
So looking a little further down the list, one of the ones that I think did get kind of ignored because of the solicitation snafu or whatever is down at rank 79 with the Tarot number 1. That was one that I had skipped, but then James convinced me to review it, and I said, yeah, I'll pick this up. It's some great stuff, but it sold 23,429 units, and I'm not going to say it would have sold gangbusters if it had gone through a proper solicitation thing, but I got to feel it would have done better.
Would have also done better with the solicitation circumstances having been a $3.99 title instead of a $4.99. I think that was just as much of a detractor. And I'll admit, I think another one of the detractors was the cover art was very busy and didn't really, it wasn't something that hooked a lot of people. We had it prominently placed on the front of one of our cascading shelves so you could see the full cover, and people weren't even touching it. They were just going right past it. Usually if a book has a catching cover, they'll at least pick it up and just look at the cover. So I think there's a couple of negatives that we're going through with Tarot. Those who did get it, we've had, at least in our store, fairly decent retention on it.
I think the other problem was the title.
Yeah.
Tarot tells me nothing about it. If you had labeled it, you know, Avengers versus Defenders or something of that sort, give me some indication what it is and why I should be excited about it. I mean, I'm 2-3 issues in, and I still don't quite know why it was named what it was named. And I think I've got a guess, but it's like the title didn't help sell the book.
Is it like actual old school Defenders, like Hulk and Strange and Namor?
Yeah.
See, I never would have guessed that from the title, and I wouldn't have thought of picking it up. But hearing that, now I'm thinking, yeah, maybe I'll go pick up a copy digitally and see how it is.
It's great art, great story, and classic versions of some of these characters.
Yeah. See, that's exciting. Tarot from Marvel, I had no idea what it was.
Exactly. So, not a great cover, horrible title. Unfortunate solicitation snafu. None of that helped sell this. Now, maybe it'll do okay on the trade side. Maybe it won't. I don't know. And part of it is it's a crowded market out there. There's tons of stuff coming out, so it's easy to overlook something. But it's just missed opportunity. Then we start to get down towards the 20,000 and under stuff, which, again, for Marvel and DC books, is still apparently viable, although, you know, it
was. I was going to say, John, before we get that
sure.
low, I do want to go back up to number 40, the still highest ranked non Marvel DC book at Spawn 304. At this point, you just can't say it's an anniversary issue.
No, it's past that, and it's definitely gotten an advantage from the hype and all that stuff around 300 and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it is the number one selling non-Marvel DC book, which is pretty amazing at issue 304. And it's a real 304. You know, you can go get 1 through 303.
And they all came out basically in sequential, you know, monthly order. I say basically because you could argue 25.
Well, yeah, that's a whole weird thing, but yeah.
No, this title has been definitely on an upswing for the last, I'd say, really since probably the start of 2018.
Yeah.
It had been going on a slow downward trajectory through 2014, got a bump at the beginning of 2015 for something or other where it just spiked up, came back at a better level than it had left, although not much, much better, and was doing between, I'd say, 15,000 to 20,000 up through really beginning of 2018, and that's when it started to do the climb up as it was ramping up towards 300. And then where it has come back and settled in is really easily twice the level it usually was selling at for most of its time.
Yeah, it really is pretty amazing. The other one, just outside of the top 50, but it ranked 54, Power Rangers Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 at just below 30,000. Is Boom title that's kind of the next highest non-Marvel DC title.
And that's a joint production between Boom and IDW. IDW, of course, has the Turtles and stuff. Boom's doing well with the Power Ranger stuff, and IDW doing great with the Turtle stuff. I think they did a great job on Turtles 100 and such. So the fact that this is doing well, I think, is a combination of not only strong current titles, but also hitting the nostalgia angle to a little bit. So more power to them for doing well on these.
Yeah.
About the only other, we only have a handful of other non-Marvel DC ones in the top 100 or so. And one of the next ones is Undiscovered Country number 3 at 26,132 at rank 65.
Yeah. And then you've got a Red Sonja number 1 and TMNT 101.
Yeah.
86 and 89.
And that's all the non-Marvel DC stuff in the top 100.
Yep.
Which is interesting because really, not only is Spawn the top one, it's the only Image one in there. Undiscovered Country. You're right. Sorry. But there was a time where we would have seen a few other things. Now, part of it is we've got a few titles like Lazarus going to about a quarterly basis. Walking Dead, of course, ended. But we haven't really seen too many of like the next big thing out of Image like we were seeing at one point where we'd get, you know, a Jupiter's Legacy or something like that periodically.
No, in the first place, Image tends to really clusters down in the 170s at around just over 10,000 units with books like Killadelphia, Ascender, Clock, stuff like that, Criminal. It kind of tends to... And even that, man, Image is, without The Walking Dead and Saga to some degree, just is not the publisher it was just a year ago.
Yeah, but I think if they lean into that properly, they could do pretty well, because a lot of those are doing around the 10,000 unit range, and there's nothing wrong with that. Those are good sales for a non-corporate-owned property. And because of the way Image is structured, if they can help creators get these things out where you can cycle through 4 to 6 new titles that run for 4 to 6 issues, you know, and just keep having new ones every month and stuff. So as some are, you know, finishing, other ones are kicking in. You could do well with that, you know, and the creators could do well with that, you know, do a 6-issue run, take a few months off, come back, do another one. And you don't have to do it as a, oh, I'm taking a big hiatus. do it as almost a, I don't say a book model, but, you know, six issues, okay, if there's interest, we'll come back, and have other titles kind of, you know, I don't say fill the void, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think people are accepting of the saga model up until the hiatus comes a little too often, or they don't come back from it.
I think it's that only works depending on who you are. I really do think that. I think Image Comics as a publisher is probably doing just fine financially.
Oh, yeah.
I think that Image Comics as a brand, not so good. I think we're seeing it more and more frequently. People are choosing to go to things like Boom. They're going to a Blaze. Now you've got the artists, writers, and artisans that's pulling some big names. I think Image kind of became its own worst enemy. They went so big, so broad, had so many overlapping titles, that what they ended up doing was choking out their own customers and forcing them to choose within their own line. And a lot of the indie readers tend to be a little bit more fickle than the diehard, you know, Marvel type readers. And I think it shows, it bears itself out. I mean, the Marvel readers show up week after week after week. There's a reason they're called Marvel Zombies. No, it doesn't mean that they drool and they hold their arms out straight. They are there. They are a regular presence. And the Image buyers are, of all of our non big two publishers, the Image buyers are the flakiest by far. They're the ones that come in for the number one all the time, because they know that it's going to get optioned and it's going to be something. And then whenever a big issue hits that's not a number one, they're the first ones to crawl out of the woodwork looking for it, which, of course, we don't have because we order, you know, subs plus one or two, depending on what the title is, maybe plus five or ten if it's like a Saga or a Walking Dead. But they are the most fickle and the ones that disappear the quickest. So they've, unfortunately, they being Image, have kind of groomed their customer as that spec hunter to just expect that number one to be the one that's worth it. And they hope to catch, you know, 10 or 11,000 people to be retained. At least that's the model they project based on what they publish.
Well, and that's the other thing. I think the lack of the big spec hits also hurt them. There were, when Walking Dead was a national pop culture phenomenon a few years ago, Image was putting out 5-10 number ones, and every, you know, all those spec hunters were buying, oh, this is all going to get optioned. This is going to be the next Walking Dead number one that's worth whatever it's worth these days. And here we are, 2, 3, 4 years later, and none of those are worth anything.
Well, I think the other thing is, from just a brand perspective, the Image Eye doesn't really mean anything, yet I think you look at, like, Aftershock, they've got a good reputation for quality stuff. I think Ablaze is starting to build that up out of the gate and stuff. Image almost just seems to be churning through titles. And again, part of it is the Image Central line that's the model for that sort of umbrella publisher. I think the bigger problem, though, is stories don't get concluded. They're not written in a miniseries with a finale that you could then do another story on. It's a, we're going to pause and continue the same story later. Or we're just going to pause and not continue the same story later.
I think that hurt Image a lot, too. There's just so many of their stories virtually never end.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't even say never end. They never get to where they're going.
Yeah. They end. They just don't have any closure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they stop. They don't conclude.
Yeah, and I think, John, what you had hinted at as a model of, you know, wrap up a mini and then come back for another one if it's successful. Now, of course, he has a cheat code because of the main character he's using. But I think Sean Murphy's the Batman White Knight, or whatever it is, the Black Label series that he's got going on. And then he had the one shot with the Von Fries. And he's back now doing his second miniseries. I think the first one was maybe an 8-issue, and this one's a 12-issue. That's that model where you kind of have a tell-a-complete story, take a break. It was hot. People liked it. Come back. Still hot. But again, cheat code using Batman as the main character. Not that it's not great.
Yeah, but it comes down to, it's one thing to have more story to tell. It's another thing to have more of the same story to tell. And that's the difference. There's a sequel to the White Knight stuff that's going on. It's not finishing an unresolved story from the first. And that's where I think a lot of these creators kind of lose their way. You know, there's a number of things I could point to where it's like, this title ended so it could get a new number one and become this title continuing exactly where the last one left off. Yeah, it's kind of a cheat and a bad way to do it. And there's others where it's just, they never got that third issue out or something like that. It kills your credibility as a creator and as a publisher if you get too many of those. And it's not uncommon for some publishers to have things where it's just, yeah, this'll drag out forever if they ever conclude it. Others, they're doing better on getting that stuff out on a monthly basis, even if they had to stockpile it all before getting any of it out. I mean, there's a bit of a cost to doing business here, but you kind of got to pay it. So it's just, I think even if you've got the sales, if you don't manage your reputation and your brand identity, you're going to lose the sales over the long haul. And that's, I think, some of what we're seeing at Image when they don't have a hot title or two to really lean on. I mean, Spawn's doing great, don't get me wrong, but they used to have titles that would be doing in the, you know, 2-3 times what Spawn's doing now. And granted, again, the key difference is Spawn's been around 300 plus issues. These other ones that would do those higher ones maybe would get to a 12th issue at best. Even then, I think that's stretching it. See, jumping around a little bit, at rank 156, we've got the Crisis on Infinite Earths Giant number one, 12,102 units. This is one that was poorly solicited of, yeah, it'll reprint some Crisis stuff and it'll have a new story, was a month late, and wound up actually kind of sort of tying into the Crisis on Infinite Earths that the CW had done as part of their stuff. But because it came out late, it was kind of, I don't want to say rendered moot, but it felt, you know, day late, dollar short almost, for the two-parter of the Giant to come out after the five-parter on TV had finished and concluded. I think they just really dropped the ball there. I think what they did in the content was not bad, but this is one of those that I originally decided to pick it up or thought about picking it up because, well, you know, do I need another copy of Crisis? Do I not? They just didn't know how to market this one. So the fact it did 12,000 units, good, but I think they had an opportunity to really transition some people from the shows into the comics, and I doubt they did that successfully.
Yeah, DC was kind of a big mess coming up the last 6 months of last year and the beginning of this year a little bit.
Do you think they're going to be able to straighten the ship?
Yeah, they've already begun to straighten it pretty quickly. The Batman title is doing that alone with new character creation. A lot of buzz, a lot of hype. What we saw towards the end of the tenure of the dearly departed Dan DiDio is that he seems odd that they had final prints. Everything went to a final print and we're only printing this one more time. And that was it. Order now and forever hold your peace. And all of a sudden now with Batman 89 and Hell Arisen 3, we're already on to our third prints. We've got a ratio variant again in Batman 92. We've got engaged partners at DC Comics on the Facebook page, which we really didn't have for about the last year and a half. It was just, they were there posting pictures, but they would not respond to us. They would turn off the chat functions on certain topics, and they're engaged. They are hyped up. They're working with us. They are bringing us more and more. We've got, you know, Nightwing 70 this week is well sold out before it even was shipped. And that's got buzz coming. We've got the Joker War, which is, of course, part of the Batman lead up. They're really starting to turn it up a notch. I think some of their other books are also going to start turning a little bit of a corner. Now, it could all just be 100% coincidental, but the fact that there's been no mention of 5G in anything right now, and the fact that there's buzz building and things that we've been calling for a couple of years that weren't being done and are starting to happen, it's either too good of a coincidence or we're going to be very sorely hitting reality here in about 2 months.
Hmm. Well, that's good to hear. I hope it pans out. I hope they can be doing more of the right things. I'm really curious what's going to happen with this whole 5G stuff, because from my reading, I do think that Wonder Woman 1 kind of kicked it off in some way, shape, or form, but I don't know what it was originally meant to be or what it's going to wind up being when it sees print. And it could be something that's either very good for DC or just further convolutes an already messy continuity that they've got.
Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to unravel right now, and I don't know. It would be really great to be a fly on the wall to understand if the discussions that are happening right now are centered around, you know, kind of the question of what the hell were you trying to do, and why is that important? Because it's been pretty loud and clear from the retailer world anyways, that the 5G thing, if not handled correctly, might as well have signaled the end, because customers were starting to get very fed up. And you know what? Maybe this Batman hype and excitement is really just enough of a shell game to distract people. But either way, it's working.
Hey, if people are reading it and they're excited and they're entertained, that's a lot of what it's all about. It just seemed like some of what I was hearing initially with the 5G in terms of what it could leave the ongoing titles as was almost like, hey, we're going to restart, you know, do what we did in the Silver Age, restart all the characters, ignoring the fact that they were able to do that because most of those characters were out of use at the time. It's not like they had canceled a Jay Garrick series to start the Barry Allen Flash. It's they weren't doing a Jay Garrick one, so they had the opportunity to do a Barry Allen Flash. It's just, it's, I'm curious, like you said, what it would be like to be a fly on the wall at DC, and what are they thinking, and what are they trying to do on some of this stuff? And then are they going to be successful in it or not?
Right.
So what else do we have in here that looks interesting? Scrolling a little further down the list, at rank number 210, we've got Star Trek Picard Countdown number 3, 8,801 units. This was the comic book prequel to the Star Trek Picard show, not to be confused with the novel prequel, which kind of contradicts this or doesn't jive with this. Both of which don't really jive with the Star Trek Countdown prequel to the original Abrams reboot movie. I have no idea how well the Star Trek Picard show is doing, but 8,800 people interested in the final part of the prequel, which actually I thought was a decent read for the comic. Seems like a drop in the bucket in terms of people who are potentially interested.
I haven't watched the show. I refuse to pay for CBS All Access.
Can understand
you
that.
And everyone else.
It's way too expensive for nothing that I need. And competing with Netflix, Hulu, and everything else that's already won me over.
Yeah, there does come a point where there's enough streaming services that people are already on that doing another one is a harder and harder sell. Unless you've got a threshold amount of material.
I was going to say, it's counterintuitive when you have NCIS on Amazon, on Netflix streaming all seasons. Like, yeah. Isn't that your big show? Wouldn't you want to keep that one on your own platform? But whatever.
Well, what's really counterintuitive is there's essentially four major broadcast networks. And for the same price, Hulu gives you three of them and CBS gives you one of them.
Yeah.
And it's not like CBS is the number one network out of those four anyways.
Yeah, I think they just thought they could anchor a streaming service off originally Discovery and now Discovery, Picard, and some other stuff.
I still think they're just using it as a negotiation tool for retransmission fees. As long as they can say, hey, some people are willing to pay $5, $6 a month for this, you cable providers should be paying us more.
Yeah, I could definitely see where they would be doing that.
And that's all they're using it for.
Sam, do you know how that bargaining chip's working for them?
Over 50% of their revenue comes from retransmission fees.
Do we have any idea of their... Sorry, we're deviating from the main topic, but do we have any idea of their subscription numbers for CBS All Access?
No, we probably get it in a month or two. They never really give them out, except they try to sort of kind of pretend to give them out when they get a boost from a new Star Trek show. Last time we saw, the last official number they gave was, I want to say, 11 million, but that was a combined number between CBS and Showtime.
Ah, okay.
Cool. I'm watching Picard and I'm enjoying it, but I can definitely see why a lot of people may not want to get the streaming service just for it. The thing is, a lot of these things that are on these streaming services wind up going to DVD and Blu-ray, and for the equivalent of, you know, a month or two subscription, you can get the whole thing. I just picked up on, matter of fact, it's coming through Amazon, Titan Season 1 on Blu-ray for like $10. So if you're patient and hit the sales just right, you can get this stuff for a decent price.
Or if you're patient, you can just wait till they're there and just sign up for a month.
True. That is true. Figure out what you're going to watch, and when you're ready to watch it, do it at that point, yeah. I think part of it, though, is, and again, this is off topic, Netflix just, they had the threshold amount of content and stuff that it was a easy thing to get people on board and makes a lot of these other ones not look as good of a deal.
Right.
So, looking a little further down at the list, we get to around rank 268. 8 and 256 for Dial H for Hero. The better selling one is number 10 at 6,742, and then number 11 at 6,295. These are ones that are low enough that I question if they're making much money on these things.
Suicide Squad down there too.
That is one of the ones that has two entries on the list.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, it trips me up too. This is part of why I think I may work on combining the stuff and just collapsing stuff down. Because, yeah, we look further down, we start to get, you know, half of the Young Justice stuff, because, again, it's split between two entries. And this is, again, the part of the list where we start getting below 300, and we start getting a lot more of the Boom, the IDW, Image books, and stuff like that. Because we start to get to the point where, because of the increased overhead for Marvel and DC, it's less profitable for them to have stuff here. And frankly, I think it's smart for these other publishers to be doing a little bit more focused niche material than just trying to hit, you know, stuff that'll please everybody. Now, one that is interesting down at rank 354 and 356 is Uncle Scrooge numbers 52 and 53. 52 doing 2,945 units. 53 doing 2,926 units. So a little under 3,000 each. What I think makes these viable is they're reprints of overseas material. I think a lot of it's coming these days from Italy. Some of it that was done in the last 10, 15 years. So it's not like it's archaic material. But my understanding, and I could be wildly mistaken on this, but if you get the license for these things, everything you do kind of becomes available to all the other licensees and vice versa, which is part of why they're able to take the stuff from Italy, translate it, and publish it, and presumably be profitable at these sales figures. Because you've got to have pretty low overhead on some of these things to be viable at, you know, on average, a copy per store.
Right.
They're just ridiculously overpriced. Because, I mean, the actual European ones I see for a Euro 20 on the newsstands when I'm in Europe, and then these are $5 as, you know, translations into English.
How long are the ones you see for the Euro or whatever?
Closer to like the Archie Digest.
Smaller page size, but a lot more pages?
Yep.
Interesting. Because this is cover-to-cover comics of like 32 pages or whatever. Yep. Yeah, it is expensive, but I was unaware of the price point on the original material.
And again, and much like your Archie Digest, there's a bunch of strips and stuff in there, probably from multiple decades, not necessarily all of it being brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I still pick them up sometimes when I'm in Europe, and they're quick, easy. They fit in your bag nicely on the train.
Well, and all this stuff is at least new to the U.S. market when it gets here, if not obviously brand new.
But yeah, these are just crazily priced.
Yeah, I think part of it is when you're selling, you know, in these numbers, you've got to have a higher price point to make it worthwhile. But the higher price point is part of why you're selling in these numbers, you know? Just a bad situation. Another one that I'm going to be curious to see if it actually completes, because it's supposed to be a 7-issue series, is at rank 443 from Oni Press, the Catalyst Prime 7 Days title. Fourth issue came out, 1,407 units. I mean, again, how they're making money on that, I am just not sure. I'm not saying they're not making money, I just, again, don't know how the math works out to make that totally possible. And that one's had some definite delays.
And I wonder how much Marvel UK plays, or not Marvel UK, but how much Diamond UK is doing for business with some of those Titan titles where it's a little closer to home?
For Titan, yeah. For something like Oni Press, I don't think so.
Isn't Oni the Portland area?
Think so. Certainly, I would think for Titan and maybe one or two other publishers that they're going to do better or as well or better in Diamond UK as in Diamond for us.
But didn't Oni and Lion Forge converge?
Yes.
And didn't Lion Forge translate a lot of Italian and European comics like Jazz Maynard? Like I thought that they had a strong European presence. Yeah, Jazz Maynard was from Lion Forge.
They may take European comics and do American versions of them, but I was thinking that was more as a licensed property, because I think with the Magnetic Press, which is one of their imprints, they did Ghost Money and one or two others that I've read. But for something like the Catalyst Prime, which was clearly targeted at the U.S. market, I would be kind of surprised if that did any significant numbers overseas. I mean, maybe it did. I don't know. I don't have access to that data. Either way, based on these numbers, you know, I'm looking at, again, the 1,407 for that. Above it for humanoids ignited, 1,419. If they're able to make money on this, it's because they've got a fairly streamlined operation and they're not, you know, wasting money on needless overhead or something. Or they're expecting to make it up on the trade side, or they're doing well digitally, or something like that. It's just, it's hard to say. But at the bottom of the list, we end up, let's see, it ranked 500 at 839 units with reorder activity on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 100. The top 300 bottomed out at 4,738 units. So, I mean, if you've got, for a small publisher, if you're able to make these kinds of sales figures profitable or whatever for you, there's a lot of room, I think, here for smaller publishers to do something that is for a more targeted audience that can really please that audience, even if majority of people just don't care. That's fine. I think there's a lot of power to that. But it's then a question of, can you do enough of them to keep a company afloat, or is it just a supplemental income and not primary income for some of the people involved? So, was there anything else you guys wanted to talk about on the list?
I'm not seeing anything, no.
Yeah, not so much for me either.
Okay. Again, $399 price point was the majority of the items, with 222 out of the top 300. 55 of the items were at $499, smattering things at other prices, with the dollar being the other most common one from the Dollar Comics and the True Believers line.
Let's give that a round of applause. Let's show some love for the Dollar Comics and keep those coming.
Oh, absolutely. I think Marvel is doing gangbusters with that, and it's great to see DC finally getting on board with that. Having heard a few comments secondhand or whatever from Dan Didio of, you know, seeming frustration that reprints were doing as well or better as new material, lean into that. Man, if they could commit to doing a prolonged run of some classic Legion stuff or Justice Society stuff or other things, hell of a way to get some of the material out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, just imagine what a $1 reprint run of the Judas Contract could do.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Well, I agree they should do them. I understand from a business side, Mr. Dio being, you know.
I get the frustration, but the thing is, if you've got something that's selling, sell more of it.
Yes. I don't disagree with
that. And I think for me, I don't get the frustration in the sense of being mad at the dollar reprint or the facsimile. Be mad at yourself for not telling better stories that aren't getting people to want to buy your current books.
That I agree with.
Or at the very least, take a look at what's happening in the comics that you're reprinting that are making them sell better. More done-in-one type stories, or more, you know, return on the investment story-wise, whatever. Figure out what your theory is as to why those are doing well. Try to replicate that in your new material. See if it boosts the sales there. And use it as a learning opportunity.
Right.
But we're definitely seeing a lot fewer price points than we used to. We are starting to see some higher ones. We had a couple of things, the $5.99, $6.99, $7.99, and of course $9.99. We're going to be seeing more of the $9.99 stuff with Flash 750, these, how much are those 80-page or 80th anniversary Super Spectaculars or whatever going for? I like the Robin one.
Oh, that's a great question. I can't remember if it's $7.99 or $9.99. What's Wonder Woman? I think it's all the same.
Wonder Woman's $9.
One of them was
$9.99.
Okay. So we're going to see some higher price point stuff. As long as they're one-shots or whatever, we'll see how those do. But that's also in this, you know, COVID-19, you know, reality we're living in. People may be a bit more reluctant to spend that much money on a comic, and they may be looking more for either the dollar comics or other things that are better bang for the buck.
Yeah. Flash was $7.99. Robin is $9.99. Let's see what Joker is right quick. Joker's $9.99.
Okay. So at least a $10 book a month from DC, it looks like, for a little bit. Which, if they've got good content, that might work.
When it tops the list, it's hard to argue with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the question of, does it benefit the title afterwards? Are we going to see any kind of carryover on it like we were seeing on Spawn?
Yeah, and if we're going to be critical about Marvel and their variant game, this is exactly where we can be critical of DC for the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, they release 8, 9, 10 covers at $10 prices, and they put their premier artists on it. Meanwhile, they've got, you know, other books that are not getting the same artist treatment and, you know, probably could have just as good or better content inside. So it's really obviously Marvel's or DC's going to put their money behind the book that costs the most. But if you look inside the numbers, there is a distinguished difference between what these DC high-dollar prestige books are doing sales-wise versus the Marvel books. Marvel, they're publishing a lot, and we're getting ratio variants. So people are upping orders in some instances. Some people are just buying straight ratio variants, forcing the retailer to up their order to get that. So you have a lot of A covers left over on the shelf. With what's happening with these DC books is you've got people buying 4 or 5 copies, maybe 6 copies, because they like the different cover art. One is healthier than the other. Maybe you could argue that neither are healthy at all, but I think you're going to see a more significant drop off if finances become a concern in the current environment that we're living in. I could see people scaling back from 5 covers of these prestige annual or whatever they're going to be books, 80th anniversary, or 750, any of that. I think you're going to see people scaling back for multiple covers, but I don't necessarily see people that are collecting 1 in 50, 1 in 25 Marvel covers scaling back from those per se.
This is where I'd love to have more granular data to know how many of the sales went to each of the different covers. Were they the open to order type stuff for Wonder Woman or the ratio stuff on like a Star Wars or something like that? Just to get a better sense for what the dynamic is for the different types of incentive covers. Because I think,
yeah,
again, while they've got the 10 or whatever on Wonder Woman, the fact that if somebody said, hey, I just want that George Perez one or that Adam Hughes one or that Jim Lee one or whatever, you could have ordered just that, you know? And I think that's a world of difference than, hey, I want this incentive, you know, ratio variant over on like Star Wars or something where you've got to order, you know, 500 or something to get that Quesada sketch variant or something like that. So the different covers influence the sales differently. It's just a question of, are we going to hit an economic situation where if there is this, be it speculator bubble or just variant cover interest bubble, can it survive that or not? And don't know, and hope to not find out.
Right.
So anything else on this? Are we good?
I got nothing, Eric.
I'm good.
All right, with that, we'll call it an episode, and hopefully we'll be back before too long to go over the February data.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking the action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales, any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.